there are just not enough shows and movies where there's Black queer romance, or where there's a Black queer protagonist or Black non-binary or trans protagonist. So I view myself as the protagonist of my music. And so I want my music to transform the listener into a new world where they imagine themselves as the protagonist and their stories are finally being told. And no matter what identity they come from, they can just jump into the groove and really feel spending your whole life paying back $1 million to this label. And so everything that you make, like including the new house you buy and the cars you own, that all belongs to the label. So after a year, if you haven't made that $1 million back, it's tough. You stuck for the rest of your life. You in debt. And it looks like you're a star to the world, but you're actually poor. Want to see more Black women in rap, because it's not just about sex as well.
For our fourth installation of In Conversation on the Venus Undefined podcast, we talk with the guest Jordan Occasionally. Jordan is a musician, singer-songwriter, and community organizer from Tennessee. In our conversation with them, we have them set the record straight on things like 360 deals, TikTok music, industry plans, and also talk about their experiences of being an independent artist, the state of the music industry, and how being a non-binary Black femme has influenced not only their creative process, but also their community organizing work. This episode was a great conversation. I had so much fun talking to them about all these things, especially finding out their special connection with Adele. This episode will be available to listen on Anchor, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. To hear the full version of our conversation, you can do so on Patreon. You just have to click the link in the description. Now, on to the episode.
Well, hey everyone, I'm Jordan Occasionally. I am an independent artist, content creator, and community organizer. I majored in music business at the University of Memphis, and I recently graduated May 2021, so that was a year ago. Now I'm out here adulting in life, but that's basically me.
Okay, so whenever you set the record straight on five words, you can do whatever order. So the words are independent artist, 360, masters, industry plant, and TikTok music.
Oh, I love this. Oh my gosh, I could do it in any order?
Yeah, whichever word you want to start with first.
Dang, I feel like industry plant is the most fun. I think people are still trying to define industry plant, but really an industry plant is someone who is already signed, but they get on the internet pretending like they just started, like they're out of nowhere. And so they literally have a whole team crafted for their appearance. For example, like ABCDEFU, I don't think she's an industry plant, but I think she moved like an industry plant. When she was saying, oh my God, TikTok blew up my song overnight, she's literally a signed artist. Like, it was all planned. That whole thing was planned. So like, in that sense, it's like an industry plant is just someone that is signed, but comes out of nowhere and just makes a flurry, because in the music industry, you don't really come out of nowhere. It's all a planned thing. So I would say that that's what that is. 360 deal. That is something where you basically sign like all of your rights away for the label to make you into a star in a single year. So like 360 as in 365 days in a year. And you don't realize when you're signing the contract that like you don't own your masters. They probably gave you a really big $1 million deal, but that's actually a loan. And so you're spending your whole life paying back $1 million to this label. And so everything that you make, like including the new house you buy and the cars you own, that all belongs to the label. So after a year, if you haven't made that $1 million back, it's tough. You stuck for the rest of your life. You in debt. And it looks like you're a star to the world, but you're actually poor. So don't sign those. segues to my next point. Independent artists. Like me, I own all of my masters. I distribute all my music through me. I am the one person source. Like, the payoff, I guess, is that, I mean, would I rather sign a deal, a crappy deal where I didn't have my lawyer present and somebody's just promising me all these dreams and I don't have any money? Or independent artists get out the mud, don't have any money anyway, so I have nothing to lose, you know? So I kind of see it like that. And, you know, there's different deals that independent artists can sign as well, like publishing deal, which will help you get your music onto like sync licensing or like Netflix and all that good stuff. So like there's other deals you can sign where it's not exploitative. I think people just didn't have that knowledge back in the day, because it's not just accessible. You know, a lot of people have been making money off of artists just as their main job. So they rely on us to be ignorant people and to want to sign our lives away. So for me, I just have a little more knowledge. I have that degree, so I'm able to negotiate things a little bit easier. So that's awesome. I get to stay independent and keep having creative control over my music. So I got those three words. And what are the other two?
Masters and TikTok music.
Okay, yeah. So masters. So what we mean when we say owning your masters, that's basically what we call our art. So like when you own your painting, when you own your public image, like our masters are our music. The actual link that we get when we leave the studio, that's what the masters are. So if you own that, it's like you go through a process online where you say, I own this. I am the person that wrote this. And whoever owns the master basically controls where it goes. So you control if it goes on radio, you control if it goes on TV, on video games, all of that. So that's why it's important to have it, because then you won't make money from it if you don't control it, if you give it away to a label. So that's really important. Basically, don't own the art that came out of your brain. That's what sucks. And then TikTok music.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a new genre of music where people just want to make a song for the app, because the app is making people go viral. And so to have a certain type of song that is dancey enough, you can create a dance to it lyrically, you can build a story off of the lyrics. That's basically what, in my opinion, TikTok music is. But in the same way, it's like people make music for movies as well, where they make really basic sounding instrumentals and all these different types of things. So it's like you can say Netflix music exists, you know, you can say video games. That's what I'm saying.
The reality TV show song.
Reality TV show music. Yeah. I can't stand it, but it's there. You know, it's like video game music. So in essence, it's like I'm not really pressed about it, because there's music for every type of thing. There's music for retail shopping. Like, you just kind of got to get with the program.
So now on to the questions. How would you say it is being an independent artist? Would you describe it as harder?
Definitely. I would say it's harder because, like I said, everything is self-funded. And so we don't have the connections with labels to be able to boost our music or to instantly put us on a new Music Friday on Spotify and all of that. We have to make those connections ourselves. And so there's no big name journalist from Rolling Stone just sitting by waiting for us to make something new and then they're the first journalist to break it. Like, it's really all us doing our research, getting to know the right people and trusting them that they will amplify us. And it is really extremely hard, because label artists that are on a label, they have a whole team dedicated to doing that type of outreach. When you're an independent artist, you're doing all that outreach by yourself. So that's what makes it really hard.
What would you say is your influence in making music, like specifically as your album Indigo or songs like Us or Lie Lie Lie? Yes. What thought process went into making those songs and, you know, whole album?
What thought process for me was Black movies and Black queer romance. Like, I'm a Libra Venus, and just a Libra sun in general. Like, I am just moved by love and love stories and storytelling. And I feel like there are just not enough shows and movies where there's Black queer romance, or where there's a Black queer protagonist or Black non-binary or trans protagonist. So I view myself as the protagonist of my music. And so I want my music to transform the listener into a new world where they imagine themselves as the protagonist and their stories are finally being told. And no matter what identity they come from, they can just jump into the groove and really feel free and feel like, you know what, I am the representation I needed, you know? And so having songs like Us, which is so heavy into loving who you are, loving your skin, and realizing people want to be like you, so why don't you want to be like you? That's what's really important, especially when it comes to Black, queer, and trans folks who struggle with their identity growing up. You know, it's important to know that they are valid. And with Lie, 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 you know, I feel like there's so many songs about love and never many songs about breakup or situationships specifically for Black queer folks. It's always like so one-sided or cis heterosexual based. So it's like, I wanted to create a song about that. I wanted to create the story that wasn't being told. So yeah, that's just the main point of my music. And whenever I release my music, I just know that it's supposed to tell the stories of the world. And it's supposed to talk about the marginalized. So that's really my perspective.
So that kind of helps me segue into the next question, which is, how would you describe Black people's influence on the music industry in general?
I mean, we've been here since the beginning of time. We created country, we created gospel, we created rock and roll. Like, there's not a single genre that wasn't created by Black people. And yet we have never been able to profit from our own music because we are seen as the commodities. We're seen as people that are supposed to inspire creation just because we are the mule. You know, we work for them. So of course we were supposed to inspire them to create something newer and better, which just means that it's just not being led by a Black face. So Black people's influence on music all the way down to I Slay, you know, like that song Period. It's the everything for me, all of that. That's our slang. Like, that's what we say. That's ballroom culture. That's Black women and Black femmes coming together to say such amazing things that ends up in pop music, like all the way down to like 34, 35. Like, that's just cooking and cleaning, all of that. Like, that's what we created. So, and when you see that a lot of these songwriters on some of our favorite hit songs are literally made by Black people. Like, I literally just found out recently that Who Says by Selena Gomez was written by Milo. Like, come on!
Yes! That's so amazing! Thank you, girl!
For that song! You. Like, I needed that song growing up because I just felt so, like, not beautiful, you know? And so to know that it was a Black woman behind those lyrics, it just makes you think, how many hit songs have been made by Black people, but they don't have a Black face on it?
Do you think that there is, I mean, we've been talking about cultural appropriation in the music industry in general, or just cultural appropriation in general, but why do you think that people gravitate towards R&B and rap, specifically non-Black artists, do to have a rebellious phase or to become taken serious?
It's because that's how they view us. Like, themes of sexuality or themes of violence, that's exactly how they view Black people. Like, in the media, when you think about it, the vast majority of movies that depict Black people usually are increasingly hypersexual or about violence, whether it's about slavery or them experiencing gang violence or anything. And a lot of mainstream music is sexual, extremely hypersexual and extremely violent in the sense of drugs and gang activity and all of this. And that's not to say that other groups don't have these same things, but this is the only type of music that's being pushed to the forefront because this is the only thing that they can accept from Black people and that they can continue to profit off of. So, I mean, when Black people start trying to say, take me seriously as an alternative artist, take me seriously as a pop artist, that's when we start getting into this gray area. They're like, oh no, like, I don't want you to tell another type of story. I want you to tell the story that I see for you. And it makes Black people feel so pigeonholed to make one certain type of music and not expand their genre.
This brings me to my next topic, which is stan culture, which is, why do you think that people, even in an album where he's saying, do not revere me, think for yourself, I'm not God, and we bring up these criticisms, why do you think that people will not accept it? Like, people were being a little weird in the comments and people were telling us that we need to be grateful that he did the song and that y'all just don't understand it. Why do you think stan culture is like that?
Stan culture is violence. I mean, stan culture is violence in the sense that the celebrities are not going to do anything about their stans. They're happy because the stan is helping them sell albums, helping them continue to gain buzz, free buzz on their album, even though they have connections to some of the biggest publications. The best buzz is fan buzz. So it's like stan culture is an extension of the celebrity, no matter how much they want to differentiate themselves. And if you have violent stans, if you have stans that make fun of marginalized communities, you're contributing to the violence, whether you like it or not. So, and we've seen that with a lot of different celebrities that fan base have doxxed other people. So when you have that power, that starts
with the letter B,
quite
literally threatened me with witchcraft at one point.
Yes. And it's that sad because music is so transcendental. Music, you know, it does feel like you're in another realm when you're listening to music. And so when you find, when everyone is loving a song and everyone knows this artist, we just jump on it harder. We want to protect the art as much as we can. But when does protecting the art then harm the other, like the listener? You know what I'm saying? At some point, it's like, these people are just human. You know, you can't really just say that people are innocent just because you really love their music. That there's still people at the end of the day. We've all done bad things in our lives. Some have done, you know, quote unquote, worse things than others. So it's like, if we as quote unquote regular people can do harm to each other, what makes us think celebrities can't do harm to
Muslims? And I also want to talk about, with rap especially, how it's become such a larger genre and more popular genre. A lot of people have been having conversations about certain people in rap who have primarily white fan bases, and how that also plays a role into stan culture, and how we talk about how it's always the people with, you know, a black Abby on Twitter who will say something overtly anti-black. So like, mm-hmm. Do you think that people sell out to those fan bases, and do you think those fan bases have changed rap and music in general? Yes.
Oh yes, you know, people don't view you as mainstream when you're only reaching, when black people are only reaching black people. You know, it's like, this is just a black movie. This is just a black, you know, this is just black art, you know, so it's only for a black audience. But when it reaches people outside of black folks, suddenly you made it, you know, you're mainstream. And so in that sense, to make it, you also want to make money from your art. So, and it just goes back to what we said before. So a lot of these rap fan bases, with them glorifying mosh pits and all that type of stuff, like moshing is actually fine, but sometimes it gets a little out of control and it gets violent. And then you have fans that are white folks who are speaking over black people saying, y'all are just sensitive about music, y'all are just sensitive about these things. When the stories are about black people, these are people that have never lived the black experience a day in their lives, but didn't feel like they're the spokesperson for it because they really have studied and dived deep into a black artist. So it gets really weird. It gets really weird because you have people, back to the cultural appropriation, putting on different aesthetics, black language, down to the way that they're doing a cover, they're singing, they're maneuvering their tone to talk like a black person, you know, or dress like black people.
Delegitimizing someone. Like, I remember that, what was it? It was this British rap, and it was a bunch of people in the song, and it was one person on there who was black, and I think she was a lesbian, and someone said, I want to jump on the beat and give you like a queer version of it, and people were like, but she's gay already. So
exactly. it's ridiculous, and it's sad because, you know, whatever we do is inherently political because we are black people, and so people just still aren't used to seeing black mainstream talent. They just don't think that black people have been able to acquire listeners outside of needing white folks to help them to help propel them. And then you have certain black artists who want to delve into that a little bit more and say, hey, I actually did kind of talk down about black people just so I could get ahead, and I'm sorry about that when the damage is already done. So
next question. So you talked previously about how black artists are often put into this box, and how when you are connecting with other black people, you're not viewed as legitimate as an artist. It's only when you have a white audience is when you hit mainstream. That kind of reminds me how people didn't know that Pink Panther was black. they thought she was white, even though she was saying like the N-word in these songs.
Oh my gosh, it's just disgusting.
But it also makes me think about, you were talking about how the characterization of black music is so predominantly over-sexualized, relating to violence, relating to drugs. However, do you think that there is unnecessary criticism when that messaging is coming from black women and black femmes?
When I hear black women and black femmes, because I'm deep in uplifting black women and black femmes in music, when I hear the rap, I don't hear denigrating like conversations about, I'ma take it. Like, you know, when I hear black men or cis men in general that are rapping, it's always, I'ma take it from her. I don't care if she say yes or no. I'ma beat it up. You know, I'ma do all these different types of stuff.
When this sex counselor, someone who works with, you know, talking about sex and things, she was like,
the ways that people talk about sex and rap is actually harmful, where it's like, I'm going to murder the pussy, I'm going to beat it up, I'm going to kill it. Like, that's weird.
It's very weird. It's very weird. And so when you have feminine folks talking about sex in a way that is uplifting, where it's like, she's in control, but in control in a way that's not denigrating and doesn't just subject her to her body. You know, it's just kind of like she is talking about it in a way where we kind of feel like we're being seen finally. You know, it's like she's taking control of her sexuality. And so that's the reason why I want to see more Black women in rap, because it's not just about sex as well. Like, even Doja with her storytelling leading up to it, like when you write and what's that song? Fuck that feeling, roller coaster fighting. Try to see if you can handle this ass. I know this song. This is every day, huh?
Need to know.
Need to know, exactly. There's like a story, like there's storytelling behind it. It's not just, I'm gonna get it if I want it. Like, there's storytelling.
Do you think that people, like, specifically remember those comments that Billie Eilish made and other people have made where they criticize rap for not having storytelling? Do you think that there is storytelling and that maybe this facade is the storytelling that so many people have, where they have this random exterior that, you know, the image that they project doesn't match them? Do you think that there is unique storytelling that is found within hip hop and rap?
Yes, I think rappers are some of the best storytellers in general, like next to country. Like, the ability to talk about certain themes, to build a visual in your head, like, through rap is amazing. And also the amount of words that they put in a 420 BPM. And I think, you know, a masculine rapper that does it well is Lil Nas. Like, he tells stories every single time he steps into the booth about people who have hated on him, about people who have wanted him dead for being gay. Like, he has told stories consistently through and through, and he is a rapper. Lizzo tells stories through and through, and she's a rapper. Like, to say that there's no storytelling in rap, it just makes me think y'all ain't listening to rap. And also, I'm not listening to white opinions on rap. Like, period. Y'all have never lived it. I'm not listening to y'all. Bye.
Speaking of Lil Nas X, what do you think the relationship between queer Black people and hip hop is, as the way that people have shitted on Lil Nas X so much? Do you think that your identity as a non-binary, can I say femme?
Yes, yes.
Femme influences how you make music, as it does with Lil Nas X?
Yes, because you think about it, like a queer Black man in rap, most of the Black men in rap that are cishet talk so badly about gay people. They're just like, you a pussy, you know, all these different type of stuff. I don't talk to dudes in skirts, all of that type of stuff. Like, they bring up a lot of transphobic and a lot of queerphobic rhetoric. So to then have Black queer people reclaim that and be like, he gonna take it if I want him to, you know, like, look, the way Lil Nas talks about sex, he's so explicit about, you know, mask on mask relationships. And I think that's really amazing, because the alternative is people that are denigrating you and literally saying, I wish you were dead. You're changing, you're influencing children to say certain things and to think certain things and believe certain things, which isn't true. So it's really groundbreaking to see Black queer folks take over these genres and really be at the top of the charts, and being so explicit about who they love. I think it's beautiful, and it's different for rap, because rap has been so, you have to be one way, and we don't allow any other type of people in.
Do you think that when it comes to women, femmes, queer people especially, that we're not allowed to express sexuality through music that is more heavily demonized? Because one characteristic criticism that you see of rappers like Megan Thee Stallion, Cardi B, Nicki Minaj is, all you guys talk about is pussy.
Mm-hmm.
Having sex. And it's like, no, they talk about other things, y'all just don't be fucked.
It's funny, like, with Black women and femmes, the thing about us in music is that they only want one at one time. And now we're in an industry where there's many Black women and femmes on the top of the charts at the same time, collaborating with each other. In the past, there could only be one at a time. It's either Beyonce at the top or Rihanna at the top or Nicki Minaj at the top. It's not going to be all of them at the top at the same time. Like, it's just not been allowed. There's only, for Black women and femmes are very tokenized. And so, unfortunately, that's the reason why you get the comparisons. Like, Megan Thee Stallion isn't like a Missy Elliott, or why don't we have people making music like Lauryn Hill anymore? It's like, that's the only artist they name, because there's millions of artists that make music similar to Lauryn Hill, similar to Missy Elliott, but they never get called up. what's the issue? Like, what's the point in that? Like, why don't we talk about the Nails? Why don't we talk about so many Black women in films and music that are really, like, Chloe and Halle, all of them, you know, that are really killing it. But the thing is that people still only want one Black woman to win, and they're able to accept very mediocre men in the music industry at any given point in time. When it comes to Black women, only one, and one has to represent all of us. I think when it comes to rap, it's not been able to be fully appropriated because it's always going to have themes and like poor liberation, poor people's stories, really specific stories to certain neighborhoods that white people would never touch, would never go within a few feet of because they're too afraid to get shot. So it's like, you can't really infiltrate or mimic an experience you've never had. And the best rap music is always going to be rap music from the messenger that is in the space that they're talking about. So it's not been able to be infiltrated because it's one of those genres that was built on the backs of extremely marginalized people who have been affected by police brutality, gun violence, addiction, all these different types of things. The certain things that Black people are constantly criminalized for. So when you have that first person perspective, it's history. And so you can't really ever infiltrate history, like especially when it keeps repeating itself. So that's one of those things that's never going to be able to go away, which I love. But when it comes to using rap lyrics in court cases, it's very saddening. I think people are always going to find a way to fuel the prison system. And, you know, especially as a songwriter and storyteller, a lot of the lyrics I write are lies. Like, I can't quite literally be everywhere at the same time experiencing everything. And a lot of these rappers are like happily married or engaged to someone. They talk about having a lot of hoes. You know, it's like, how can we decipher truth from fiction?
So I kind of want to pivot to something, I guess, a little bit less. Okay, first, on the topic of music, talk about, I think you made a video with like Adele Checks Up on You.
Yes. What about it?
So just like, I guess a lot of people are confused where it's like, how did it even happen?
I'm sick. No, honestly, I was just doing great marketing. You know, I took a book out of Lil Nas X's book when he said Barack Obama co-signed the Montero shoe with blood. And I saw an opportunity. I had the plan. I just needed the platform. And at that moment, people were talking about Adele. She had just come out of hibernation. So I said I was going to be the one that Adele loved. Because her loving Drake, it just, in my head, it didn't make sense to me. So I was like, if people can believe that, which is actually true.
So she doesn't check up on you?
She didn't. She didn't. But maybe one day she will. Maybe one day too. I had many fooled, and I'm actually proud of myself for that.
Because that reminds me of Charlie XCX, where she just admitted to lying about that video. She's like, my label wants me to make another TikTok. And I'm like, she's like, oh no, I was lying for fun. But I'm just like, who the fuck wants Florence from Florence and the Machine to make a TikTok?
Like, I'm a Pisces moon. I'm going to fib a bit, and y'all are just going to have to get used to me. That's really how that is. But most of the things I say are true. That just wasn't.
Okay, now I want to talk about your work via community organization. Maybe like a background about that and things like that.
Absolutely. I've been a community organizer for 2 years, because I organized my first protest around Breonna Taylor, because I noticed a lot of people weren't saying her name, and I noticed a lot of people weren't saying Tony McDade's name because they were a trans man. And so I noticed a lot of similarities between extremely marginalized people, that they weren't being censored in that moment. This was while people were saying we need to talk about Breonna Taylor as well, you know. And I think I was galvanized at a very young age when I was 14 years old, and I saw people's response to Mike Brown and just people saying that, you know, this person wasn't an innocent person, so essentially they were meant to be a martyr, you know. And it's the most disgusting, disheartening thing to say that someone is innocent or someone is guilty, and yet they still deserve, police still deserve to be judge and jury. I don't think anyone should be judge and jury on the life and death of any of someone, especially children. And so to know that I was the age of a lot of the young kids that have been killed at that time, it really opened my eyes to see that, like, racism doesn't stop, you know, no matter how old you are. It just chooses you, unfortunately. So since then, I started to write songs about my feelings because I went to a predominantly white school, so I didn't really have anyone to talk to about what I was going through. And so I started to do my own research, make my own community online, really, and just find people that made me, that helped me make sense of my thoughts. And so it was through music that I was able to connect with more people as well, because a lot of my original music is about gentrification, police brutality, and all of that, because that's just what I gravitated towards when it came to like getting it out of my system and not having a therapist to help me work through my problems. So I would say like community organizing chose me as well, because I felt as an artist, I didn't want to be on the sidelines. I didn't want to just write music that was influenced by the world. I wanted to be in the moment as well and know that I was making my impact on the world, not just through music, but through my actions as well. And so I started to organize protests, multiple actions, multiple fundraisers, raised thousands of dollars for families, gave away over 1,000 PPE material for families, including kids masks, different types of things. How I got into it was there was a lot of people that were finding me on social media that lived in my city. And I felt that it was irresponsible to have so many people messaging me, asking me, hey, when's the next action? And to just let their questions just go void. So I just organized my own action because I had over 50 to 100 DMs saying, where can we meet up next? So essentially, if I'm going to be the person that they were looking to in that moment, I felt that it was good to bring them together so that we could talk through our pain often. And so we really protested. I organized 3 protests. And each one got bigger, from 50 to 200 people to 500. So I ended up winning an award for it a year after. And it feels weird to win an award for something that you were living in, but it also felt great to be recognized by my community that they were happy for the efforts that I made. So I've never stopped organizing. I still organize via social media. Currently organizing all the time. I was a community organizer with this nonprofit called Center for Transforming Communities. So whether I'm tied to a nonprofit or whether I'm doing it independently, I'm always trying to uplift marginalized people.
For some reason, I guess we forgot to record us saying goodbye, but I had so much fun with this conversation, and I'll have all of Jordan's social media linked down below so you have a way to contact them and connect with them and follow them, and you should do all of that. I love Jordan so much, and this was such a pleasure to record and film and edit and all those things. So yeah, if you liked this, save it, give us a thumbs up. I don't even think you can do that on podcast, but anyways, and stay tuned for the next episode of In Conversation.